Good afternoon, everybody. It's about 10 seconds past noon on April 20th, 2021. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Pleasure to have you with us, or you might be listening on the archives. We know a lot of people do that, nature of podcasting, and we're happy you do that, okay? And we do archive everything over at ace-ed.org. You'll see an icon over there for podcasts. Just click through, and you'll see all the things we've done over the past couple of years, okay? And you will enjoy the podcast. You'll also see our magazine over there, an online journal called Equity and Access, all part of the American Consortium for Equity and Education, again, over at ace-ed.org. We invite you to go over there. Everything we do over there is free. Please enjoy yourself over there, ace-ed.org. I have a lovely show for you today with my old friend Mike Johnson, okay, who's now the Director of Content Partnerships at my good friend Benetech, the company that gives us Bookshare. Okay, he's brought with him two librarians from the world of colleges, Southern New Hampshire University, and I'll introduce everybody in just a second. Mike, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm good. Where are you today?
I'm in lovely southern Wisconsin.
Lovely southern Wisconsin. How is it? Is it snowing there? What's going on?
It's not snowing, but it was below freezing when I got up this morning.
It's always below freezing. Same here in Maine, and I'm sure same in New Hampshire, where my kids grew up. Okay, Anaya, are you there?
I'm here. How are you today?
I'm fine. Call me Larry, please. It's a pleasure to have you here. Well, are you? I live in Maine, so I imagine the weather is pretty much the same as it is here today, right? Is that right, Trish? Good day.
Yeah.
Trisha?
Hello. It is.
Hi.
It's great. Getting some sun, so enjoying that for sure.
There you go. Okay, Trisha Previtt and Anaya Jones. Anaya, am I pronouncing your first name right?
You are. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Well, my pleasure. Okay, they are both associate professors. Correct me if I'm wrong, ladies. Both are associate professors and e-learning librarians at one of my favorite schools, Southern New Hampshire University. Am I correct, Anaya?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We're both e-learning librarians, but I'm an assistant professor. Trisha's gotten the promotion.
Okay, congratulations. Congratulations, both professors. Okay. Professor Johnson,
right.
Are you there? Professor Johnson, are you there? I'm going to call you
I'm
professor,
here.
Too. Good.
Sure.
Talk
Go
to me.
Knock yourself out.
Thanks, Beth. Professor, tell me about what you do. Tell everybody what Benetech and Bookshare does. It's key stuff. And we're going to talk about accessibility, addressing inequities in information access, and the great work that this company does. So go ahead. Mike, you're on for
sure.
A few minutes.
Okay. So Benetech, we just had our 20th birthday last year.
Happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We are a charity which focuses on using technology for the social good. And our largest program is around global literacy.
Yep.
So while we're not a blindness organization, so we don't do things like work training or rescue, seeing eye dogs or canes or things like that, we focus entirely on using technology to get quality content available for people with print disabilities, which could be people with low vision, people with no vision, dyslexia, or any other physical or neurological disorder which prevents the reader from having a successful reading experience with a traditional print book.
Let me just stop you right there. But since you just said dyslexia, and I know you guys do wonderful work. Again, it's Bookshare, Benetech, all right? But just, if somebody has dyslexia, what would you guys do to help them read? Just give people an idea on that.
Sure. So there are a couple different things where you can use technology to help a dyslexic reader. The first, where you can do what I like to call ebook karaoke, where the words appear on the screen, typically highlighted, with a matching audio. So you're getting two sensory inputs.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And you're seeing the words, and typically with dyslexia, the challenge is in decoding the letters or the words. And so if the words are being highlighted while the word is being read to you, it helps with the patterning to help you understand what's going on. There's other technologies around line spacing and line coloring. So you might read from left to right, and then when you get to the end of the right, when you go back to start the next line, your eyes don't track correctly, and so you don't know, am I on the new line, am I on the old line, did it go up a line instead of down a line, things like that. So there are other technologies around the tracking of the eye and the tracking of the words on the digital page.
This must cost the user, okay, or the teacher who's going to recommend it, a fortune. What is the cost of these products, Mike?
Well, for you and your listeners, Larry,
absolutely free.
So any qualified student in any educational institution in the United States of America can join Bookshare for free and get access to our almost 1 million titles for free.
It's unbelievable.
Forever. So we are in part funded by the U.S. Department of Education.
Yep.
And then we have a number of donors, some of them small-time donors, some of them large, significant donors who are donating hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to help with this work. So as long as you are qualified by a professional, that you have a reading disability, then you can become a Bookshare member. And again, for you and your listeners, free. Anybody who qualifies. And as a
anybody,
student,
free. Yeah. You tell your friends. They don't have to actually listen to this, everybody. Just tell them you heard it. Bookshare and Benetech. It's bookshare.org, right? Bookshare.org.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good. And I just, what a great company. Okay, is all I can tell you. Now, tell me about your job, and then I'm going to ask both of you. We'll start with Anaya because you're first, because your first name starts with an A. Okay. Congratulations.
Okay.
Another scientific process.
It is. Okay. And Professor, tell me, an e-learning librarian, tell me all about what you do over at Southern New Hampshire University, just your job description type of stuff. Then we're going to ask Tricia, okay, because she's an associate professor, so we're going to ask, she's going to have a little more time, I guess. Go ahead. Anaya.
Yeah, because it's a little different, but we're fine.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. Tricia and I work together. We spend a lot of our days together. And we're working in a lot of different areas of the process, but we are librarians who are focused on helping integrate the library in ways that help support the educational outcomes of our students. So what we do that's a little different from some other folks in libraries is that we are working with the folks who are designing online courses for our students and helping them integrate library resources into those courses, helping support educational outcomes for research-related topics, things like that. So that's kind of that's a broad base, but we certainly seem to get our hands in a bunch of different projects. So I think
I bet you do. And this brings up an interesting point, Tricia. Okay, you're an e-learning librarian, associate professor,
mm-hmm.
Tricia. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to assistant professor and I. Okay, we got to make sure. Like that, right?
Just means I've been there longer and I'm older.
I know. You're both fantastic. Okay. E-learning librarian. Okay. And by the way, mm-hmm. I think you should talk about this. I don't know the exact percentage, but I know in Southern New Hampshire there's a large percentage of kids going online, especially, you know, I'm sure it's greater now with COVID. Okay. Talk about why you call yourselves e-learning librarians. You can incorporate all about Southern New Hampshire in that. Okay. It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Do that.
Yeah, definitely. So Southern New Hampshire University, I think we're up to around 160,000 online learners.
That's a lot.
So, yeah, it's a lot. So, I think we've definitely had a good year in terms of students turning to us as a name that they recognize for online education.
Oh, yeah.
We've been doing it for 25 plus years, you know, so when, you know, decisions had to be made about if what freshmen were going to do in their first years dealing with the pandemic and ultimately a lot of schools, you know, having to be online, I think they turned to us. But in terms of the e-learning piece of it is, you know, there's lots of other librarians out there that do similar work. You know, they might not have the same title. Online librarians, you could consider us maybe instructional design librarians.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, maybe, you know, yeah.
I like
so
that
really
kind of encompasses that work. And we're really trying to be thoughtful about how we work with our students, how we can help them learn information literacy, resource evaluation, thinking critically. Our information world is so compounded, and it's really hard these days to find, and sift through the what is good information, what is misinformation. So those are some things that we really focus on.
It's really wonderful what you guys do. And by the way, all librarians go to heaven. I don't know if you know that. Did you know that?
True. I did not, but I'm glad to hear it.
It's good. And also, I can't see you doing a podcast, but I know you both have your hair in a bun and you're both wearing sensible shoes. Would that be correct? You are librarians.
Oh, man, and Ion, you want to go for that one?
You want to? Okay, no, never mind. Don't even answer that.
Working from home and therefore not wearing shoes.
But how about the hair in the bun?
Yeah, ditto.
No, I'm only kidding. We love librarians. All librarians go to hell.
Listen, I resemble that remark.
Mike is wearing sensible shoes. Let's talk about this, okay? Because we're talking about accessibility and addressing inequities, mm-hmm. which is what basically Bookshare does all the time, addressing inequities. But I'm not going to call it books. I'm going to call it, it's addressing inequities in information access. That's what you mm-hmm. really and truly do, okay? And what percentage, if I may ask, just to get this started, Anaya, what percentage of the students you work with need help, like the kind of help Bookshare can give them?
Ooh, I definitely don't have a figure off the top of my head.
Just anecdotally. Yeah.
So 13% of Americans have disabilities. And what I'd like to add to my answer to this question is, we have, somewhere in the 13% of our students, may need additional access like this. But a lot of the things that we're trying to ensure our content has can be helpful for folks who maybe don't have a documented disability or even just have a preference for consuming content in a different way. So
speak further on
while
that. Go deep on that one. Yeah.
We have students who absolutely need access to this content in a way that's accessible to them. And I say it that way because accessible is not one thing to all people. So
agreed.
Different students or different learners are going to have different needs for that accessibility for that item. But some of the things that we look for when we're talking about, more accessible content are things that are going to be helpful for folks who use screen readers or who use a keyboard to navigate different interfaces and websites.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those same functions can be really helpful for people who, maybe English isn't their first language or for
great.
People who like
yep.
to like to have their content read to them, even if it's not an ebook natively. So maybe we have, an HTML document, but there's a reader embedded. That can be really helpful for somebody who maybe needs to have their hands busy knitting. I do that sometimes. It's not the only way that I learn, but sometimes if I'm having a hard time getting through, assigned reading for class, I will knit or crochet or do something crafty with my hands. It keeps kind of part of my brain busy, and then I can listen to the content instead of reading it. So there's lots of benefits there.
And how much? Let me ask the other way. What percentage? Okay, of the vast information that you folks have at the Southern New Hampshire Library, what percentage of it is, I'll have to ask it this way, you can correct me, fully accessible to everybody? Is it 100%? And I'll ask that to Trish.
Well,
or whoever. Yeah, Trish.
Sure. So the answer to that is going to be a little bit complicated because, again, accessible isn't the same thing to all people, right? So if you really want to get really technical, probably a very small amount of stuff is 100% accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe taking a step back and looking at that a bit more broadly, more content comes into kind of accessible enough for most purposes of that standard. But one of the challenges that we have with providing accessible content to our learners is that a lot of this content isn't born accessible, either because it was published before we were publishing things widespread electronically. You know, some stuff really is that old, or because these publishers haven't yet adopted publishing workflows that produces born accessible content. Either way, we do have a truly large amount of items that aren't accessible in the ways that we would like them to be. And thinking about retroactively making them accessible is really overwhelming to think about. So I don't have a clear answer for you.
Your answer was perfect. Okay. So if someone comes to you, and let's say they're studying history, okay, and they need to look at a document that's in a book or whatever you want to say like that, can you make that accessible to them with a request, let's say to Bookshare or something, okay, or, you know, by request as opposed to just having it there? Is that possible, Trish?
Yeah, definitely. So I say definitely because anything's possible, right, with enough time and money and drive.
Yeah.
But I think it also depends on the specific vendor, you know, that we're working with or the publisher of that content.
Mm-hmm.
It also, you know, it's interesting to me that you picked history because, you know, if we think about some
history teacher. Yeah.
Well, then you probably are well aware of, you know, the follies of working with primary sources and whether
that's what I was thinking.
How do you make a how do you make a, you know, like a film clip, say from like a silent film clip from the 1920s? Like how would you make that accessible? Now we certainly can, you know, add an audio description and to, you know, add context, you know, through a transcript for those that have vision impairments or are blind. But by nature, like especially primary sources, those are really hard. And so
mm-hmm.
I think it depends on the vendors that we're working with. It depends on, you know, we have part of our contracting process with any of our existing or new vendors is to ensure that we have something that's called an electronic information technology addendum where they are supposed to work with us, you know, on issues like this and making content accessible.
Cool.
So it's a way that we can, you know, try to ensure that at least our vendors can understand what we need, when we need it, why. In some cases, I don't know what else you need to explain other than someone can't see this film and has no idea what's going on. Like, I don't know how else to say, like, that's pretty black and white to me.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
we have that EIT that we can lean back on and say, like, all right, let's work on this.
It's fascinating. You guys are doing great. I'm really appreciating your answers. Mike, okay, where does Bookshare fit into this? You're a director of content partnerships at Benetech and Bookshare. Okay, what's the role of Benetech and Bookshare in this? Okay, as we talk about these things, and you work with librarians, obviously, and the publishers. Talk about that. Your role in this, the company's
sure.
role, however you want to approach it. Yeah.
Right. So there's two main pieces as it relates to what we refer to as born accessible content. The drive at Bookshare is to help all of the various pieces of the puzzle, from author submits manuscript to reader has a successful reading experience, and everything in between. Of course, there are many steps between. Have everybody be aware that the content should be born accessible in all through that
mm-hmm.
channel, from author to editing to production to ebook conversion to a wholesaler like a ProQuest or an EBSCO or a Follett or somebody like that onto
mm-hmm.
the buying site, into the learning management system, into the software reader, into the assistive technology, all the way down to the end user. So there are two major programs inside of Benetech to address this. Bookshare is the first one. Like I said, we have almost a million titles, and they come from two places.
Mm-hmm.
The overwhelming majority of those titles are donated by the publishing community. So we speak with publishers, we work out the details, we have a donation consent agreement, and they just send the files to us, and we do everything we can to make them more accessible. Now, we can't make everything accessible either. We don't have the money or the time or the resources, but we make things far more accessible than they would be, and certainly way more accessible than something like PDF, which is an inaccessible format. So we do that. We translate into five different formats to help our users. So that's one piece. Now, in a circumstance where a publisher refuses to participate and an institution such as SNHU comes to us and says, look, we have a Bookshare member and you don't have this title available, but they need it for this upcoming class. So we are protected under the Chafee Amendment to the U.S. Copyright Law that as a recognized entity by the federal government, we can go and purchase that book, strip the spine, scan the pages, and create a not-too-terrible digital version. Now, you lose a lot in the translation from scanned pages to not-too-terrible digital version. It's way more accessible, but you're not up to the point where it'd be born accessible. So that's the one piece, the long-standing piece, the million title database piece. The other piece, which is where I spend much more of my time, is working directly with the publishing community to help to teach them how to create the titles fully accessible at the first place. So we go right to the workflow, and we get to the point where a publisher is ready to release a title to get into a ProQuest database or to get in to Amazon or Kobo or wherever it is, VitalSource, wherever it is they sell their content. And at that stage, which we consider the birth of the ebook, we want the book to be born accessible. So we have a program called GCA, Globally Certified Accessible, where any publisher can come to us and we will teach them how to make their books fully accessible right at that first point, Larry. And the critical part beyond the accessibility piece is it just one digital version. It's not a digital version for these kind of people and then a separate digital version for those kind of people. No, one digital version, one ISBN, one price, just a better ebook experience for all of the users. And this is just like other accommodations within the ADA, like curb cuts. I mean, Larry, back when everybody used to travel, I know you used to travel all the time. Well, those of us who lug our rollerboard luggage, we love curb cuts. Well, you know, the city of Bangor, Maine didn't put curb cuts in to make your luggage rolling life easier. It's there because it's a federal requirement to ensure easy mobility for people who have mobility challenges. But everybody benefits.
That's
closed
right.
Captioning on TV. You can't make and sell a TV in the United States without closed captioning capabilities. You can't broadcast in the United States without closed captioning. Doesn't mean everybody turns it on, but that accommodation is there for people who can't hear or struggle hearing, yet it benefits everybody because you can always turn closed captioning on for whatever your reason. You're in a noisy place, et cetera. So those are just a couple of examples, as well as like the voice technology.
I'll give you a better example. A better example is the more people that we can provide information to, i.e. making publishing fully accessible, those people will become doctors and scientists and any other profession you can think of that will bring to our society so much good, okay? Forget how it affects the average person, okay, in terms of literally practicality. Over the long run, we are allowing people to fulfill jobs and professions that will benefit us all in the long run. The SNHU, okay, Southern New Hampshire, okay, is training people for that future. If we can't provide the information for them, we might lose a person who might discover the cure for cancer to take it to the ultimate. Okay? It's that simple. Okay?
Yeah.
And you talk about
totally
black and white. Yeah, the more we do, it's just so important. And you said something that just struck me interesting. You said that, well, you don't have to name them, obviously. As you go to a publisher, the publisher turned you down. Name them. No, I'm only kidding. Don't name them. That's unbelievable. We'll turn you down. Peace.
Larry, I want to thank you for putting it that way, because I think, you know, those of us who are having multiple conversations over time about accessibility like this, I think it feels hard not to bring up the talking point of like accessibility is good for everybody because I enjoy using closed captions, or even folks without disabilities, you know, appreciate this enhanced ability in their classes. But the truth is, like, things should be accessible because some folks need them to be accessible, right? Like, that we shouldn't have to have the talking point of, but it's good for everyone. I mean,
it just is. Period. End of discussion. I mean, it's so
right.
Obviously, and now we have the technology to do it, et cetera. And yeah, there's a cost, but there's a cost to everything, for goodness sakes. Okay, it's unbelievable. As librarians, okay, you're the, I don't want to say you're not quite the end user, but you bring about the end user's success. And I just, either Anaya, I'll start with Anaya. Anaya, can you think of a success story, a fun success story that you've had with one of the students with all this? just out of just to make it human.
Yeah, so we've had a lot of, I think on my time working with accessibility at SNHU, and I see a lot of little victories, a lot of little things that have worked, that are working better than they did before. So that's the majority of what comes to mind. I will say it's hard
to
share, really human stories because we do have concerns about student privacy. But one of the things that we've done that I think has had a real impact on students is that Trisha and I and some of our colleagues have worked to improve mostly on the internal side to SNHU, to the library, our communication workflows for when we work with vendors. So we have set up processes in our ticket management systems, and we've made escalation pathways that walk through exactly how much time we give a vendor to think over a request before we come back around and ask again and ask again and ask again. And having that logged out and having a defined, a defined workflow for recording the information about how those things go, saving our email conversations with vendors just so that we have, internal accountability for that has really decreased the amount of time that elapses between when we get a request for information and when we get that information for the student. So we have, over the last year and a half or so, have really improved that process. And that's not something that students see, but it is something that absolutely improves the student experience our resources.
Yeah, that's great. The students don't see it. Okay, it's just you're right. I mean, it's incredible. Tris, do you want to add to that or give a little thing that comes to your mind as I say success story?
Yeah, definitely. So similarly to Anaya, I can't discuss a specific student instance, but I know, we don't want to call it specific vendors, but I have, one in mind where we have had a pretty significant success story where, we might have started with, they're accessible. They've got this VPAT. They've shown us, they're telling us that they follow ADA. Like, we're good. And you kind of go through that, initial phase of this is the law, so I'm sure it's fine, until you actually engage with a user that is using a piece of assistive technology and comes up against a barrier, right? Something that's not working either in the platform with the search functionality. Maybe they haven't coded and followed the WCAG standards. So I'm thinking of an example where we were unable to get a screen reader to actually read out the different results, numbers and titles in a results list. And so if you're a user trying to conduct your research, you can't see it. The screen reader's not telling you. If you don't have a sighted person, either whether that be a librarian working with you, or I know some folks, may have someone at home or someone that comes and helps them do those things, but that can't be the answer. This stuff, there are, WCAG exists to make it accessible for screen readers. So there are things we can do for that. So, we went to the vendor, we documented it. I took a video of myself going through with the screen reader and, highlighting those pain points to the vendor. Yeah. And when you actually present it in that way, I would say most vendors are no, actually we get it. Let's work together on, let us look at the platform. What can we do with the platform if there's a specific resource issue, or let's look at remediating that. So in terms of the success story, there are certainly some big name vendors out there that are committed to doing those things. They've worked with us, and it's not only just to solve for that immediate barrier that user is experiencing, but also committing to making advancements and updates, to their platforms, and then also, to the resource workflows that, Michael was kind of saying. That's encouraging for sure.
It sure is. And, I have to go back. You said, you try to work this out and you work a lot with the vendors. And I actually thought, I think it was Anaya who said this. I thought you were going to say, and I just want to ask you this side of the equation, because you guys are course designers. You help the professors. Okay, design their courses. Okay, from the point of view of the library, which I think is great. Okay, when you work with the professors with all this, accessibility in particular, okay, how does that work? Are the professors, and I'll just go to Anayo on this one, are the professors aware of the need to, that their students need to have accessible materials? Anayo.
Yeah, so happy to talk on that. Work somewhat with faculty. We also work with instructional designers who work on like multiple classes at a time. And I would say that in both instances, they are aware that accessibility is important, but there's not always, we have varying degrees of understanding of how resources are inaccessible or could be made more accessible.
Yep, yep,
and certainly,
yep.
You know, some folks who get it more and some folks who maybe need a little bit more help in that area. And this is one of the areas where, you know, we are working on this from one angle, but our work here is really supported by our colleagues across the university who are doing similar work or who are supporting accessibility in other ways. But we are situated in a really specific place in this course development process for SNHU where we can really advocate for the evaluation and incorporation of library resources with a specific eye to accessibility. So we include accessibility information in our trainings and in our workflows for adding new content. So we're really prioritizing and helping those teams developing the classes to prioritize the inclusion of more accessible content.
As mentioned, all librarians are going to heaven, you two especially. Okay.
We're very fortunate to have these two amazing librarians on the call
they're
today,
pretty cool.
And there are others around the country doing all sorts of wonderful things. I'd like to stress to your listeners that the power to make this change, the power to get all educational or library content available, fully accessible, rests almost entirely with the buying audience. So school teachers, district personnel, textbook adopters, library purchasers, county coordinators, state legislators, the people who are spending the money buying the content actually control this entire process, even though they're not aware of that. Because like they've done with their EIT at Southern New Hampshire University, if a school district or a state says, we are no longer going to buy content, filling in a date to give people time to catch up, unless it is certified accessible, then that will get every publisher, every library publisher, every textbook publisher, every history professor, everybody will just understand, okay, well, that's the law now. Like, you can't use leaded gas anymore. It's just not allowed.
Ha.
So you can't go around and ask for it.
Good analogy.
You just can't do it, right? So the power in every individual librarian's buying choice and in every individual textbook adopter in a K-12 district, a university professor, any of these various things, public libraries, wherever they are, they have the power to make this change by simply requesting or demanding, depending on their attitude.
Demanding.
If they're from Philly, it's going to be demanding, right? So demanding that,
like me,
that the content that people are trying to sell to them or the software systems people are trying to sell to them be third-party certified accessible.
Yeah.
And then everything just flows down through the whole process like that. So I just want to get that to your listening audience.
Thank you for doing that.
They have tremendous power here.
It's such an important point. My only addition to that, and Michael and I feel like I've had this conversation a couple of times. So for the benefit of your listeners, we have so much power, but it doesn't always feel like we have that power. Sometimes you have to step into it or kind of, believe it before, sort of fake it until you make it a little bit. You do have that power. You have to believe it and act like you have it, even if it doesn't always feel like it. And while we do have a good amount of power just as purchasers, I would encourage anybody who's hearing Michael say this thinking, I would encourage you to reach out and find other folks who are doing similar work, whether that's within your institution, outside your institution. Libraries love doing things together and having, consortial agreements. How can other libraries that fit in your or other educational folks that aren't at your institution but are doing similar work How can you, you know, team up with people? Because being able to say, you know, all of the schools in this school district aren't going to buy your inaccessible educational materials is even more powerful than I personally am choosing not to. So believe you can
exactly
do it,
right.
And then find
and
friends.
I'll tell you something, and I work a lot. You know this organization, I'm sure, AASL, the American Association of School Librarians, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've had many, many conversations, and I do love school librarians and you guys, university librarians, but, okay, librarians, and this has been told to me by the organization itself, we really need to push them and any group, I might add, to advocate for themselves. Okay, and this is where it begins, okay? And you get together, you're a group, and you move these things forward. This is very important in this day and age, and I'll tell you something. This pandemic, as horrible as it is, and so many deaths, and the repercussions will last a long time, but it exposed a lot of things. And the one thing we learned is that we can't wait anymore, okay? The time is now,
absolutely.
Okay? This is the door is now open. Okay, look at the dollars coming in, et cetera. So I think it's just great. You three do amazing work. Okay, I'm going to include Michael in that. Okay, because what you do is bring a lot of information to a lot of people that does for the common good. You're wonderful. I thank you, all of you. Please stay safe. Everybody vaccinated? New Hampshire's almost fully, right? Trish?
Hey, working
Trish?
Towards
it.
Yep, I got my second shot not too long ago.
Good
so.
Girl, that's the spirit.
Awesome.
Okay, I know New Hampshire, I think, just opened it up so anyone who happens to be even in New Hampshire, to be a resident, can get your shot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Something,
yes.
Pretty wild.
Yep.
Okay.
Come to New Hampshire.
I do all the time. I live in now. I live 40 minutes from North Conway. Me or everybody? Me or everybody? I love New Hampshire.
Everyone.
Okay, live free. Thank you. I thought you were inviting me particularly. Come to New Hampshire. It's a great place. It truly is. Live free or die. The only license plate with an actual death threat on it. So it's a great place. I love the place. All right. Live
yeah,
free
there's
or
also
die.
That.
Right. And from America's Dairyland, which is kind of a nebbishy title, but we still love you, Mike. It's not that doesn't have the oomph that the live free or die has. Michael?
That's okay.
American.
I mean, we have better beer, so that's
yeah.
okay.
You know, right,
ooh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, we're going to have to fight on that one. Although I did Line and Kugel
mm-hmm.
used to be my favorite, okay? I got to tell you, man. Okay, and Steven's point special.
That's
Mike,
right.
That's still, yeah, I know it. I know it.
Yeah.
Okay, all three of you, thank you so much. You guys have a great day. Okay, stay safe, please.
Thanks
okay?
for having
thank
us so
you
much, Larry.
For all the work you do. Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Anaya, Trish, and Michael. Michael's this scene, let me get this right, the Director of Content Partnerships at Benetech Bookshare, bookshare.org. Need I say more? Go over there. They're going to heaven, too. We'll archive over at ace-ed.org. Go over there. Check out what we do. You'll love our magazine. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks for listening.